As Jesus finished his Sermon on the Mount, he spoke about building on sand. Sand is a fascinating substance. I think most of us have played with it a little bit, maybe at the beach at one time or another. But the nice thing or the interesting thing about sand is it's very easy to work with. It's very easy to form and to set up the way we want it, but it's also very fluid. And so Jesus states that when we hear his sayings of mine and we don't do them, then we're building with sand. And as he said, it's very easy, but it's not stable. Much easier to build our lives on worldly thoughts or on the easy way that the world functions. But the words of Jesus, although much more difficult to build our lives upon, are permanent and fixed. We'll come back to this a little bit later, but this got me to thinking years ago about sand and thinking about sand and the purposes of sand. And so I searched through the scriptures, and unfortunately the concept of sand is only used in these two ways in the scriptures. I think it's used once in the Proverbs as a weight, but basically it's the number of grains of sand that are emphasized in the scriptures with Solomon's wisdom and with the number of children that Abraham would have. But what I want to talk about is the fact that sand is a perfect example of transition. Sand is something you build yourself a beautiful little sandcastle. And if you're an adult at heart, then you build yourself an elaborate sandcastle. But at the end of the day, when the tide comes back in, that's going to get washed away. All the work that was done is going to be for nothing. And as the waves come crashing back onto the shore, they hit it, they pull it back, they hit it, they pull it back. And about three or four times, you can't even tell that it's ever happened. And so the principle of water's effect on sand to remove all traces of human existence is a very important concept that I want to develop this evening. So as we think about sand and the way that sand works, I'd like to start with one of the songs in our songbook, actually two of them. Time is filled with swift transition. Not of earth unmoved can stand. You know, if you think about a wave crashing up on the shore and pulling everything back, that's what time does to all human effort. And so time is filled with swift transition. Build your hopes on things eternal. Hold to God's unchanging hand. And then another song, beyond this life of parting, losing and leaving, far beyond the losses, darkening this, and far beyond the taking and the bereaving, lies the summer land of bliss. I believe that it's very, very important that we build our hopes on things eternal. One of the things that we will develop in this lesson is that our memory will not survive two or three generations. Most of us, we can remember our parents. We can remember our grandparents. Some of us can remember our great-grandparents. But after that, who remembers? Even the family, who remembers anything about them? We don't have any memories that overlap. They lived and died before we were born. And so mom may have told a few stories or dad might have told a few stories, but we don't know anything about them. We don't know what they look like. We don't know what they did for a living. We don't know really probably where they were born, where they died, how old they were. None of those things. And so all flesh is like grass and all its glory like the flower of grass. The grass withers, the flower falls off, but the word of the Lord abides forever. And so, with the sands of time, we see something like this. Newlyweds planning to start a family, building a new barn to be a blessing to them. The years pass, maybe more slowly than the tides of the sea, but they pass. And the results are the same. We see them all the time. Someone built this barn. It was the foundation of their hopes and their dreams, maybe 100 years ago, maybe 75 years ago. And yet now they are in the ground and all the work. You know, I'm reminded of that story that Jesus told about the man who was going to build bigger barns. And Jesus said, tonight your soul is required of you. Actually, God said, tonight your soul is required of you. And whose will these things be? But as we see here, this is a perfect illustration of all the hopes, dreams, plans, and goals that we have for this life. Time is filled with swift transition, not of earth unmoved can stand. This picture here is my life and your life. It is what will be, and it's part of the fixed system that we see throughout the scriptures. And so one generation passes away, and another generation comes. Now, the man who wrote that is Solomon, and how many generations? Probably 100. More than 100 generations, 200 or 300 generations have passed since he wrote this, and nothing has changed. Like the tides, like the waves in the ocean, the sun rises and the sun goes down, hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls around continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers came or come, they return again. In other words, life is just a continuous cycle with people coming and people coming off. People coming on, people going off. One generation comes, another generation goes. The same sun has risen and fallen. The same rivers have emptied into the sea, and then the clouds have come back and filled them up again, and it's just a continual cycle. The only thing that changes is the people who are here. And one generation back, it was our parents who were our age living here. And we were the young looking up to them. And now things have shifted. And so we saw it with grandparents. We saw it with our parents. It will be with us. And it will be with our children. And so is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. Now we can say, what a depressing sermon, what a depressing thought. Or we can say, I'm going to shift my priorities. I'm going to shift what I think is important. So this isn't a depressing sermon. This is not a depressing sermon if you are building your hopes on things eternal. If, like the Apostle Paul, to die is gain, to be with Christ, to depart and be with Christ is very far better. We're not going to lose anything because we have built our lives on spiritual things. And so the response, I think I told you in the past that the first time I took the book of Ecclesiastes, I think I was about 19 or 20 years old, and it was the most depressing information I'd ever heard because I'd never understood or known any of this. And my life was built on an entirely different system than the understanding of what these things are. But now when I read them, I just accept them as reality. They don't bother me at all. And so the emotional response to this statement is very important because, like the barn or the sandcastle, we're building a beautiful life right now. But never forget, it's going to all be washed away by the sands of time, and someday there'll just be a plaque in a graveyard with my name, when I was born and when I died. And people will look at it and say, wow, he lived to be this many years. And that's about all they know. That's about all you can figure out from the gravestone. I mean, I guess you can figure out from the quality of the gravestone whether they were loved or not, or whether they were rich or not. But there's not much we know. And so it's all going to be washed away. And so what memories are we building with God so that when he's the only one who remembers us, because that day is coming, the time will come. 50 years from now, 100 years from now, you say, ah, that's so far away. No, that's how Solomon thought 4,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago. God is only one He will be the only one to remember me. When I stand before him in judgment, he will be the only one. What memories am I building with him? So there's something worth remembering. Now think about it. Jesus told the man building the bigger barns, what will you take to God? What treasures have you developed with God? And so this is a critical thing. This is what your life looks like and my life looks like. We've intricately worked it out and made it. This is all made out of sand, but you know what's going to happen. In a few hours or a few days, depending on when the high tide comes in, that's all going to be washed away, just like that. And someday, that's what's going to happen to my life, and that's what's going to happen to your life. So while our lives and memories mean everything, I'm building memories, you're building memories. My grandchildren were just here. We took some time. We took them different places to build memories with them. And after we're dead, they'll probably remember about that much of it. My grandchildren will remember they had grandparents. They'll remember a little bit about us. But the fact is, we're building these memories. And we pass some of them on to our children and our grandchildren. But you know, I sometimes wish I could ask my mom and dad things now, because I don't share all of their memories. I would really like to sit down with my dad and have him tell me about what it was like when he was growing up. I never got around to asking him things like that when he was alive. Now I have lots of questions. But you know something? I don't have an answer. No one has an answer. And when I die, even the questions won't even be asked anymore. My children remember a little bit about my grandfather, but my grandchildren never met him. And so we do pass our most cherished memories to our children, but they're not going to be passed. The things that are so important to me today, the things that I'm wanting to build, the trips I'm wanting to take, or the things I'm wanting to buy, or the things that I'm wanting to accomplish to make my home better, or to develop this idea or that idea. And the fact is that as we stroll through that old graveyard, we see names and dates. They had the same dreams and hopes that I have. They had the same life built. But you know something? None of that matters anymore. The waves have crashed and pulled it all away. The barn has crashed down. Many of the homes that they were living in are now gone. And so, truly, God is the only one who knows. God is writing everything we're doing in a book. It won't be forgotten. So, when God is the only one who remembers, what memories do we share? He doesn't share our memories of wealth and power, of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. He doesn't share our memories of working on our home or taking trips. These are things that are inconsequential to him. They're not sinful, but they're not righteous. They're just part of a life. But they don't matter, and they're not going to be brought up again. Those things are not important. What matters to God is faithful service and sacrifice. Will we live so that God's memories of our unwavering faith and commitment are fixed in heaven? Now, as I said a moment ago, this can be a very depressing, a very unhappy lesson. But on the other hand, in 100 years, you may be thanking me for preaching this lesson, because it changed the way that we see our life. We're just a breath. We're just a sigh. The years pass so quickly. So will God remember me as a friend, offering devotion, genuine worship, and sacrifice? Or do I always put him second and I get what I want? And the things that he wants, well, if I get time, that's going to happen. But you know, I like this passage about Abraham. You, O Israel, are my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the descendants of Abraham, my friend. Well, what did Abraham do to make God his friend? Well, he always put God first. He always trusted God. He sacrificed for God. Whenever God asked him to do something, he got up the next day and he did it. He was a meticulous man of faith and commitment and devotion. And we don't know too much about him. He dwelt in tents. He got wealthy, it seems, as a side effect or a side benefit of being a servant of God, but it certainly doesn't seem to be where his priorities were. So God assures us. Zion said, "The Lord has forsaken me, the Lord has forgotten me." Can a woman forget her nursing child and not have compassion on the son of her womb? Surely they may forget, yet I will not forget. See, I have inscribed you on the palms of my hand. Your walls are continually before me. Now, of course, that's Zion. That's in Jerusalem. But I am now a citizen of Zion. And if that's where my priorities are, God is not going to forget us. The living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. Now, we know from further revelation that this has to be focused only on the here and the now. This is not talking about Elijah and Moses coming back to this earth to talk to Jesus about his coming death in Jerusalem. They still know things. But we don't know anything about what's going on here. They have no more reward here, for the memory of them is forgotten. Their love, their hatred, their envy have now perished. Nevermore will they have a share in anything done under the sun. Once we die, we will be forgotten. And when we're forgotten, God will never forget. And when we stand before him on the judgment day to be receiving the things done in the body, whether good or evil, the time to think about this is not when we're dead and we look back and say, "Wow, if I'd only known then what I know now." Well, we can know it now. And so when we go to the beach and we watch those waves rolling and crashing and pulling back, and here's an old sandcastle that some child built earlier in the day, and now it's being washed away. Well, that's something that we need to focus on in our own personal lives. You know, like we sing in our songbook, as the life of a flower, as a breath or a sigh. So the years that we live, like a dream, hasten by. True, today we are here, but tomorrow may see just a grave in the veil and a memory of me. Depressing? Realistic? Optimistic? Hopeful? How do we feel when we sing these words? These are words that are true. And if we've built our lives around them, there's no stick, there's no sting to them. There's no sense of being forlorn or depressed. Now, if our priorities are in the wrong place, this song is a very, very depressing song. But if it's a song that we have incorporated into our lives, while we tarry below, let us trust and adore him who leads us each day toward the radiant shore, where the sun never sets and the flowers never fade, where no sorrow or death may its borders invade. Seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness. That's what Jesus admonishes us, or advises us, or counsels us, or comforts us with. It just depends on where we want to focus. If our focus is on this life, our family, our friends, our money, our trips, our goals and plans are all here and now, then this sermon is probably a real downer. But if we have our priorities where they're supposed to be, then this is a very wonderful lesson, because we can say amen and amen and amen, and yes, this is now where I am. And I've spent my life preparing for the time when there's a memory of me, and for the time when no one remembers me except the Lord. Where'd that song come from? The voice said, "Cry out." Now, if you go back and look at this verse, this is the prophecy about John the Baptist, the voice of one crying in the wilderness. And this is his question: Lord, what do you want me to cry? And as his mission is summed up, he says, here's what I want you to say. All flesh is like grass, and all the loveliness is like the flower of the field. Every spring, wildflowers are in bloom. And every summer, as the rain begins to stop, they wither and they die. And God says, that is your life and my life. That's the life of all flesh. The grass withers, the flower fades, because the breath of the Lord blows upon it. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers and the flower fades. But the word of our God stands forever. And I might add, and the world is passing away and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. And that's the question. And that's really what this lesson was designed to do. It's just designed to get us to think, okay, where am I right now? We've seen a lot of changes in the last 6 months. A lot of things that we thought were fixed and permanent have shown that they are transitory. And even the republic itself, even the country itself, is showing signs that it is not permanent. And it's fascinating. This is a fascinating time to live through. If you're a Christian and you're just observing it and not really too concerned, because whatever God's going to do, he's going to do. And worrying about it and fretting about it and being concerned about it, it's not going to matter. And that's what the series in the morning is all about, is to get us to understand that if God decrees, no man will add to it, no man will diminish it. That's what's going to happen, but he will always take care of his people. And so even though we are grass, and even though all the beauty of our life is like the flower of grass, God has already proclaimed, if you do my will, you will abide forever. And of course, Peter tells us that the entire material creation is going to end up like that sandcastle. That even if we can build one of the seven wonders of the world, and our name can go down in history like Aristotle or Socrates or somebody like that, even if that's the case, there's an end. There's an end where this world will be no more. Since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? You see where he puts the emphasis? Holy conduct and godliness. Everything I do today that is based on holy conduct and godliness will be remembered. Everything else will be forgotten. Everything else is just all flesh is as grass, and all the glory is like the flower of grass. Holy conduct and godliness. Looking forward to and anticipating and hastening is really the idea here. This is something we're excited about because we understand the other part. Everything we do here is just temporary. So why should it be such an important part of our life? Looking forward to and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. So this is a good wake-up call. It's a good opportunity for you and I. I mean, the next time you see a sandcastle, the next time you see an old barn fallen down by the side of the road, the next time that we are brought face-to-face with time is filled with swift transition, we ought to be able to put a smile on our face and say, that doesn't matter. I've already calculated that into this equation. This is not something that I'm not aware of. And it doesn't bother me. First time we hear it, it's very troublesome. First time we hear it, everything that we thought we knew, we don't know. And everything that we are unaware of is what really matters. And I think that's Jesus' point when he says, if you don't build your life on my words, Your whole life is going to crumble. This beautiful house that you're building, be it a sandcastle or that barn that we saw with the home next to it, or whether it is something else that is so important to us. Jesus says, you know something? I don't care what you build. You can build a multi-billion dollar empire. But when you die, whose will that be? Because you're not going to have any control over it. You may have a will. People may contest that will. And the people you wanted to get it may not get it, and maybe the government will get it all. We just don't know. But what we do know is that if we use those things that we have to put money into the eternal treasury, then it won't matter. Instead of this verse being, or this sermon being something that causes us discomfort or dismay or a sigh, this will be a lesson that I don't think you could smile. I'm not going to say this is a wonderful lesson that makes us smile. But it's a truth. And if we understand it and we recognize it, then we can be prepared. But if we're not, if this is still troublesome to us, it more than likely means we have still not factored it in to the truth of our life. And it's an intrusive thought that maybe we'd rather not be there. But those who feared the Lord, and this is really a good way to close this lesson, those that spoke to one another, and the Lord listened and heard them, and a book of remembrance was written before him for those who fear the Lord and those who meditate on his name. They shall be mine, says the Lord of hosts, on the day that I will make them my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spares his own son who serves him. I want that. And I know you want that. But it doesn't come free. There's a price to be paid for it, just like there's a price to be paid for everything that we would like to have. And we willingly pay it. Many of us took opportunities in our youth to put money aside that we could have spent then, but we wanted to be prepared. We make sacrifices, short-term sacrifices for long-term gains. We do it in the material realm, but God is saying here that you can do it in the spiritual realm. And God has promised that everyone who serves him and has come to Mount Zion, I will never forget you. And so, brethren, we need to carefully consider these things, especially in, well, there's no especially, I guess, any time in our life, whether it's prosperity or adversity, whether we are going through the prime of youth or we are going toward the dark days that the scriptures describe. It doesn't make any difference. That's the beauty of all this. Jesus made the point in one of his parables that the man who's hired at the 11th hour still gets the same wages as the one who bore the heat of the day. Now that's not to say that people who serve God their whole life won't have a much more profitable life than the one who is converted in his final days, but the Lord's point is very simple. No matter when we figure this out, if we figure it out before we die, then it will be to our eternal glory. And so, brethren, as we pick up our song of encouragement now, and we think about, well, let's see, looks like I have one more slide here. Sorry, let me put your book back for just a second. After the tides of time have washed away all evidence of our existence, and even my bones have gone back into the dust, the memories of my faithful service will still be in his mind. And so, this is something that we all need to give careful thought to. And you know, we probably could have done without that slide, so I'm just going to stop right there. Let's go ahead and pick up our songbooks. As we sing this song, let's think about kind of a taste has this sermon left in your mouth? How do you feel right now? and rejoice because we've done all these things. We don't have to make any changes. Are we despondent as we realize, maybe for the first time in our life, that this is what life is? This is what the curse has done. This is why we have to serve God faithfully, because 70, maybe 80 is all we get. And so if, as we are singing this song this evening, there's anyone in the audience who is touched, who realizes how important these things are, then let's start making these changes. So the next time you hear this lesson, you can feel, wow, I've done it. And this is now a very pleasant lesson, because I'm prepared. I'm prepared for what's coming. Whether I want to think about it or not, it's coming. And I'm prepared. And so, brethren, if there's anything we can do for you right now, we'd like you to let us know while we together stand and sing.